This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
100%. So one of the big processes that we have is, first of all, we tell them how hard it's going to be. So, right. You know, like this is how many hours you can do. And if you don't put this many hours, you won't win, so that there's no sense in putting this many hours in, because the only way to win here is to push right through, and then you win at the end. You can't pull halfway and sort of win it. You're not getting paid along the way. You earn money, you earn profit at the end. And so we try to share what it is. Another big thing that we do is like the best recruiting programs, top grading, Jeffrey Smart teaches what you're trying to identify is, in the past behavior that people have, what have they done that prove that they've done things that are exceptional? They've done things that are a lot of hard work. They've done things that are a big commitment. So past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior.
This is the interview process, basically.
The interview process, that's right, and sort of seeing where they are. And then another thing that we do is we use a tool called Predictive Index. And so it's tracking their personality to identify, you know, who will more naturally do this, who has the assertiveness or the extrovertedness or the driving skills or the driving personality to really do well in the program.
I don't think in college I would have passed your rigorous. I don't think I would have. I think I was more of an introvert in those days. I wasn't a networker. I didn't know a lot about sales.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview. So welcome to another collaborative episode. Chris Thompson from StudentWorks up in Ottawa, Canada, joins me to discuss his business. He has a unique business model where he works with students to help them run painting, contracting businesses during the summer. And while it's a painting business, it's really an academy for raising young entrepreneurs. So I hope you enjoy the episode. If you want to learn more about Chris's company, StudentWorks, studentworks.com on the web, they work with students up in Canada, and I think you'll find it fascinating to learn about his business. You like that?
Yeah.
All right, Chris. So we're not live, but we're recording now. So
exactly.
I don't remember how we connected, but I'm glad we did. So today's going to be a unique episode. We're kind of talking about what you do and what I do from an advisory standpoint, and all the work that we're both doing to help entrepreneurs, in your case, young, you know, college students, which I think is fantastic. So just as a little intro, so you and I met, we spoke, and then I looked at your website. So your website's called StudentWorks.
Yes. And studeworks.com.
Right. Yeah. And it's basically a painting contractor's business for kids, but it could be anything. So you're teaching these young kids, and I say young, they're in college, most of them, right?
Yes, exactly.
So maybe some high school. I mean, you're really teaching them. You're like the Mr. Miyagi of entrepreneurialism. You're teaching them to wax on and wax off, and they don't realize that they're learning all these skills and running their business in with fundamentals that some of us take an entire lifetime to learn. So I'd like to know, let's go backwards a little bit from my standpoint, and we could talk all about me later, but you know, where did all this come from in terms of how did it develop, and then why had you develop the business concept and start working with the kids?
Yeah, no, we really short circuit and really what my VP says, you know, a lot of people sort of have this long, you know, consistent road to success. Now, a lot of people don't get there. And he says, come jump with us and climb the backside of the cliff.
That's how you mentor with people, right?
Get there fast. And we've got safety ropes and things like that for people to sort of get up there, you know, safely and successfully and consistently. But I bumped into, you know, what I call one of the co-founders of our business, Helmut Beeman, in 1984. I ran an orientation at St. Mike's University of Toronto campus with his girlfriend at the time, now wife, and they're both still really great friends and just amazing people. So I bumped into his girlfriend. And then we became friends through this orientation process. And he said, hey, I'm running this business. At the time, it was a $650,000 business. And he said, we're starting to scale it with, you know, operators. And it really is kind of a franchise concept. It's not a franchise because there's no real investment, or there's a much smaller investment. And the company itself doesn't take any money in advance. I got started during my years.
So that's summers, 35 years ago.
35 years ago.
Yeah,
yes.
A long time.
So, you know, I was the 10th owner operator of the business. So there was like one and then five the year before. And then I jumped on into that chasm, and it really started to grow and expand. We ended up being a Profit 100, one of the fastest growing companies in Canada over those first 5 years. We expanded through the U.S.
And it was a painting contractor at the time?
It was a painting contractor, but we really consider ourselves—
But it wasn't called Student Works, right? No.
It originally was called Student Painters. We changed it to Student Works, and we go by the Student Works Management Program, because that's really the secret sauce, is we're a management program. Although ultimately what we deliver is painting and window cleaning services to our customers.
Right. But it could be anything.
Yes, that's exactly. It totally could be. And in the future, there may be other services that we'll provide as we continue to get better and better at this. But I did every role in the business in terms of an operator. And then the next role we have, Mitch, is a district manager, so that they go out onto campuses and they recruit, you know, other entrepreneurial-minded, leader-minded students. And then on top of that, well, at this level, there's a VP, but at different levels, I was the VP. And then eventually I got the opportunity to buy in and become a partner.
Okay. So when you met him 35 years ago, he was doing this. Like, that was his model, was to find students, to teach them business skills, and to do it through the painting business.
100%. Yeah. So that's what it was. And there was a company years ago that existed called College Pro, and they actually were the first that I know of in the industry that started in 1971. Okay. And their business got really large over the years, and they exited the business about a year ago. So they no longer exist in the College Pro painting space. Okay. But he actually had been very successful in that business and brought just the thinking and the mindsets and the concept of the business. And then over time, our business became very, very different and candidly just much better than what they were running. They got really big in a different area of the business. Their business got bought by a venture capitalist and just went on to really, really a bunch of great success in other areas.
Okay. And you said there's multiple partners, or now you own the business, or what's
Yeah, so in 1989 I bought in, and then basically, the business continued to scale and grow. And in the late 80s, or sorry, early 90s, there started to be some struggles. Some of the expansions in the U.S. didn't go well. If I think back on it, it was like we just thought we were way smarter than we were. There's a lot of youth. There's a lesson. Thought we were way smarter and expanded the territories without really, in hindsight, a really good business plan, without, you know, proper financing in place, just assuming that we're just going to keep ripping it and just growing hand over fist and profitably. And all of a sudden had some real setback. And then there was a big change in legislation in Canada, which they brought in this thing called the GST, a goods and services tax,
okay,
which really, along with, it's one of those things I always love to tell our young leaders is there's going to be black swan events in your career across the economy. And through the late 80s or early 90s, unemployment jumped up to 9%. And I remember talking to a vice president of TD Bank, who was a good friend of my father's, and he said, you know, Chris, we have enough commercial building in Canada for the next 10 years. We've totally overbuilt that section.
Right.
And so that had a major impact on the residential painting business, because a lot of the commercial focus in Canada started to focus residentially. And the business got went and was much more challenging to run. Our averages went down. And Mitch, one of the biggest things we did was we made a mistake in how we were strategizing the businesses. We used to have 120 operators in Ontario, and we kept recruiting that 120, but we'd recruit later and later into the season. So we would recruit into March, and then we'd start them then. And just our, it became a, later on, we changed that strategy and we only recruit now in the fall. And that's one of the biggest reasons why our averages have grown so much over the years, is we spend all of January, February, March, April, just focused on our training and support of our operators.
Getting them going.
That's exactly it.
So you're only in Canada now?
We're only in Eastern Canada, so from Windsor to Thunder Bay to St. John's, Newfoundland, and Halifax, those, you know, everything in between.
Okay, so I think that it's an interesting model, because not only is it good for your business, but you're teaching kids how to run a business. So maybe we can go through what you do. You know, you get introduced to some. Actually, is there like a life cycle for the operator? I mean, does he he graduates out of the program and out of college, and then he goes on to his career? Is that typical
Well, one of the things that we've done is we had an independent consulting firm do a test or a business case around our students, and 99% of them get a job that they're really satisfied with within 6 months. And 97% get it within 3 months, and that's usually because they go on a trip. 40% become C level or director level in a business. Within 5 years, 40% earn over $100,000 within 5 years. So we're really able to show the success of our program. One of the other things that we've done, Mitch, is we've tracked our millionaires. About 25 years ago, probably more, I set a goal to co-create 1,000 millionaires, and we've started tracking it. Right now, our website says 161, but since that, we've tracked another 10, and I know there's more out there. And it's 171, and it's something that we take a lot of pride in, and it really gives really the entire organization a lot of excitement and motivation. But there's no income from that. It's not like there's a business model that captures
feel good type of a
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
So when these kids go into the program, that's why you're recruiting more, right? Because you got some kids that are graduating out and going.
Yes.
Onto their thing. But I can imagine that on a resume showing that you made, you know, you were doing $120,000 to $150,000 of business in the summer running a painting business and know how to deal with employees and books and marketing and all that type of stuff. It's got to be, I mean, if I learned that when I was in college, I'd be a different person now. Probably wouldn't be practicing law between.
But even though, Mitch, you know as well in law, those same skill sets are what make you successful in law. I can close business. I can interact with clients. I can solve problems. All right. Those sort of skills, like a law career, is really important, having those skill sets.
Yeah, but the skills that I've developed have taken me, I'm 53, I got a lot, 30 years to develop.
Yes.
Maybe not 30 years. I mean, I didn't just develop them now, but 20 years of doing it on your own, like you said, of trying things and failing and hopefully finding the right mentors. But you're talking about a structured program that takes kids through almost an entrepreneurial academy.
Yes.
Right? That gets them up and running.
Yeah. And it is an entrepreneurial academy. That's exactly what it is. So, you know, just to dig in, Mitch. So, you know, your listeners and my leaders understand is first of all, we start recruiting in the summer. So we've already had 50 referrals from our program this past year. We get 50%. This year we had we call it a COVID bump. It actually it assisted our business once we were able to work.
Right.
But we have all sorts of operators more than ever want to come back. So we have 50 this year. It'll be 110 of our operators returning, and then we've already had 50 referrals, and now we're back on campuses through networking, through social media, through all sorts of different methodology, trying to identify those people who really want to be leaders, because it really is a unique person who wants to work that hard. I want to work, you know, 20 to 25 hours a week around my university, you know, activities, and I want to work, put in a, you know, most of my weekends through that fall season, or sorry, the winter season, because we get started. We do all of our recruiting up until December 1st. We have an orientation, and then we basically take the, you know, season off, the December season off, and then we get started in January, the first and second weekends. We run big trainings, and we're teaching people how to market in the snow and go do estimates in the snow. There's three focuses of the preseason. How do I recruit my team? How do I market business? How do I sell business? And doing that on that 20 to 25 hour week schedule.
So you're going, well, I guess with coronavirus a little bit more difficult, but you would go on campus where you'd make presentations and have
networking. We're using social media more and more now. We also have a really great partnership with the Student Life Network. They don't exist in the United States, but it's a way of reaching students, and we're doing our best to reach more and more students over the internet. But it's difficult to reach people because they don't really know they want to be reached. The reality is people aren't looking for this type of opportunity because they don't know this type of opportunity actually exists. What do you mean? You could actually learn how to run a business. I could actually be coached and trained. How's that possible? Right. And one of the biggest challenges that we have is that people think it's too good to be true. You know, it's like, how's that possible? I remember one of our, well, he's actually now doing really well in law in Ottawa, but he graduated at the top of his class at Western and did 4 years with us. And when he graduated, you know, he was on the dean's list all 4 years. He paid for his school, bought an income property, went to law school, and he said, "No one would believe you, Chris, if that's what people thought was possible." And it's completely possible. That's what happens in our program. Right.
Well, it has to do with the time you put in and your work ethic and whether you're willing to follow what you tell them to do, right?
And as well, you know, the person I'm talking about is Scott Tremblay. Shout out Scott. They're exceptional people. They're smart. They're hardworking. They're committed. They're coachable. Exactly.
So you must have a pretty rigorous application process or onboarding, because you want to weed out the kids that are really not going to take it seriously, really not put the time in. It's hard work, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to convince them more to say no than say yes.
100%. So one of the big processes that we have is, first of all, we tell them how hard it's going to be. So, right. You know, like this is how many hours you can do. And if you don't put this many hours, you won't win. So that there's no sense in putting this many hours in, because the only way to win here is to push right through, and then you win at the end. You can't pull halfway and sort of win it. You're not getting paid along the way. You earn money. You earn profit at the end. And so we try to share what it is. Another big thing that we do is like the best recruiting programs, top grading, Jeffrey Smart teaches is what you're trying to identify is, in the past behavior that people have, what have they done that prove that they've done things that are exceptional? They've done things that are a lot of hard work. They've done things that are a big commitment. So past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior.
This is the interview process, basically.
The interview process, that's right, and sort of seeing where they are. And then another thing that we do is we use a tool called Predictive Index. And so it's tracking their personality to identify, you know, who will more naturally do this? Who has the assertiveness or the extrovertedness or the driving skills or the driving personality to really do well in the program?
I don't think in college I would have passed your rigorous. I don't think I would have. I think I was more of an introvert in those days. I wasn't a networker. I didn't know a lot about sales. Somebody maybe could have taken me under their wing, but I think it's hard. It's probably a hard program to get into, right? You're not going to find every kid that.
Well, when I was younger and not as I was going to say smart, but really not as experienced, to see that I used to think that I could make anybody successful in the program.
Right, and that's what we all try to do. I try to do that too, but you also have an obligation to the health and success of the company on behalf of all the other people that are involved, right?
100%. I found that it doesn't work. We need to, you know, recruit this level of person. Then the other thing we do, Mitch, is we track their success. We give them lots of coaching, weekly coaching sessions, lots of training, lots of systems here, listen to the recording, lots of improvements. Like, we have people who come in and are introverted and they have other track records of success. So we go, okay, this is what we're going to need to do. Let's practice. Let's role play. Let's get comfortable. Let's break down those barriers.
But they have other things that you see. That make us interested.
100% that we feel. But the biggest thing about all those things are, my father was a very successful lawyer, I think, as I mentioned here in our conversation.
Right.
He was an introvert, but he goes, hey, I became a fake social over time. I can do the social stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what you do in court.
That's right. I learned how to do that. And so it's like, if you have the need and the desire, then you can go do it. So we coach those strategies moving forward.
Right. I mean, a lot of that is also just getting past the first few times, like realizing that it's not as daunting as you think it is if you have the other elements that you're looking for, you know?
Well, one of the things I always love to have people identify is, if you really think about it, we're afraid of people. Like, literally, and that's our reptilians.
We're afraid of a lot of things in our life. Yeah, absolutely. We're afraid of interactions with people. We're afraid to go up and say, hey, can I paint your house? Yeah, we're afraid to ask those kind of questions because this is the way we're raised, right?
Well, but this is what I believe is, I think it's kind of like, you know, millennia, like it's ingrained into us. You don't want to stand out in the pack. The people who stand out in the pack are the weak, and they get picked off the pack, right? Like, you know, just if you think about those hunting.
Bullied. You show up on Instagram and you're like, oh crap, I don't want them to see
that. This was thousands and tens of thousands of years. That's what's in our system. We don't want to stand out because we're going to get attacked. But in fact, there's nothing to get attacked. You're just going to knock on someone's door and say, hi, how are you? You know, I'm a local university student. I go to Queens or U of T or whatever. Are you interested in any painting services? And so having a conversation with people, and then pretty soon you recognize,
That's not so bad. Not only that, you got a little bit of an advantage. I don't know if you tell the kids this, but the fact that it's a student knocking on your door, most people are not going to slam the door in their face.
100%.
Right? Yes. If it was an older person, you know, our age, you'd be like, yeah, get a life, you know? But in terms of the kids, they're going to give them more consideration.
We're really, really served by the nature of people wanting to help out students. So they get it. Oh, here's a student. Like, there's no question that it's a community builder. Oh, like this program supports that local entrepreneur, but then also 5 to 10 students who are going to work for that student.
Right. So you almost feel good about hiring them to paint the
100%.
House. 100%. Yeah. So it's a good sales pitch.
Exactly. Yes. And we use it.
So, you know, I'm very big. So I specialize in writing all the agreements that people use to run their business, right? Whether it's startups, operating agreements, client agreements, customer contracts, all that type of stuff. But I'm very big on business planning, writing a business plan. It doesn't have to be charts and graphs and 100 pages, but it's got to be some sort of a working document. So, but your business, the kids aren't starting from scratch and they're not creating their own businesses. Like they're not thinking of the idea.
Right.
So when they come into your world, what do they have to do? Like what kind of a plan do they have to put together?
Great question. So you're right. There's so many things already set. And a lot of times an existing Facebook account that they'll take over, or they've got a student with the StudentWorks website. It's already built. So we have what we call a max launch, and it's every district manager sits down with their operators. One of the things that they do is they go through their values. What values do you have? Because one of the things is, first of all, a lot of times people really haven't thought about their values. It's like understanding, well, what are my values? And then one of the things, obviously, we look to do is run the business on the basis of their values so that there's alignment. And then what we look to do is get their, what are their goals? And why do they want to achieve those goals? What are their 3-year goals? What are their 20-year goals? So that, again, there's a real alignment for their future. In the program. Then we work on, and again, it's not just business goals, because we have to school goals, extracurricular goals,
right?
So that looking at their life as a whole, you know, how am I gonna get my workouts in, or you know, see mom and dad when I said, or whatever is important to them,
right?
You know, I go to church every Sunday morning. Okay, great. Go to church every Sunday morning. So it's whatever their schedule is. And then we block out and really teach them how to really excel with a schedule. Because I think that's something that if you really look at high performing people, they're really great at
time
planning
management.
Their work and working their plan.
Yeah. Time management.
You know, so then what we do is we start to track, well, if you want to do $100,000 worth of business, how many estimates would you need to do on January 31st?
Right.
It like literally it sort of walks back, and we just walk them through every week. This is the type of activity you're going to need to put in.
Right.
And by the way, that's another success factor that we found in the business, Mitch, is that over the years, you know, it's always the exceptional people, the exceptional circumstances that make you not see things clearly, I think. So one of the things
because it skews your vision of or what's possible. You're like, oh, everyone can do that. And that's not true.
Someone will have a slow start, and then they'll be really successful. And it's like, oh, see, everyone can do that. No. They just did that.
Right.
That's not rare. Our VP, who's really, really smart, shout out Pat. He basically has done all sorts of mathematical equations and looked mathematically over decades. How have people done it? So we go, if someone's not at this point, they're not going to win. And unless there's this type of an exception, it's not possible. So let's stop them. And so we've brought our minimum targets up more and more and more over the years. And what it does is we have less bad experiences. Those people tried, they worked at it, they went to our trainings, they learned a bunch, but they didn't go buy equipment, start their business, have all sorts of extra costs associated with
their
business.
Because you told them that maybe this isn't for them?
We told them, let's stop. Let's stop, because you're not tracking to be successful. Because you know, as a lawyer, it doesn't always work out. And the real thing that what successful entrepreneurs do, in my mind, is recognize when it's not going to work out and stop.
Right. Well, but you know, and this gets back to knowing your numbers, knowing your marketplace, and knowing your performance indicators.
Yes.
You know what those indicators are when you're working with a student. I mean, it's important for their success. It's important for them not going down a road that maybe isn't for them.
Yes.
They're not doing the right thing. I mean, it's
absolutely.
It's, yeah. Yeah. And that's how you run a healthy business.
And we're able to provide that coaching, you know, over time. Like there's this great book called The Weekly Coaching Conversations. It was a New York Times bestseller. It came out, I know, 4 or 5 years ago. Brian D'Souza, and he wrote a fantastic book, but we read it and we went, wow, this is actually how we run our business. So many of the themes that he uses, right. So many of the, you know, like right now in business these days, so many businesses are so metric focused. How many calls did you make? How many conversions did you have? And all those things are good, but what are they doing around coaching them?
Right.
What are they doing around actually learning how to make the calls better?
Right.
Learning how to encourage.
No, because they just think from a corporate standpoint, if there's enough numbers,
yes,
eventually we'll hit the numbers. We don't care what happens to the people. And it's not, yeah. And companies shouldn't really operate that way.
Right. Yes.
They should operate as if the people matter.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it.
Right. Because at the end of the day, you're just replacing them with new bodies. And and companies have failed because big sales organizations have failed because of the fact that that affects their culture. They're not supportive of each other, right? I mean, you must have people that are all cheering on everybody and their success, right?
100%. And one of the things that our CRM has basically lists all of our operators by their number. So they're able to see, oh, wow, I want to now move from number 30 to number 25. I want to, you know, and we have all sorts of targets and incentives and programs that all successful sales-oriented companies do. But again, it's both. The metrics matter, but the people matter most. And the people's learning is the most important part.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
Right. Well, it's their ability to meet those metrics. I mean, when it comes
That's exactly
to it. And you're right. I mean, I think one of the problems with the perception of sales in general, at least in the United States, is that people look at sales and they think sales is trying to some underhanded way to convince somebody to buy your product or service. And that's not what sales is. Sales is the process of educating a person, figuring out if what you have they need, and truly helping them make a decision that is in their best interest. But if you don't get involved, like you said, with the salesperson, helping them with the psychology of it, helping them with the things and saying, listen, you can do this and be comfortable as to how you do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't, right? You don't have to be the cold call person. And then, you know, at night you're so nauseous from the experience that you have. It's terrifying to you. I know people like that have gone through stuff. Like, I remember I started in the insurance business when I got out of law school. My dad's been in the insurance business, longtime salesman. He's a great salesman. And insurance, life insurance specifically, is very hard to sell, right?
Yes.
Nobody wants it. It's not tangible. It's not like, oh, we're going to change the color of your house. Your house will be beautiful. Nobody wants it unless they're going to die. And then you can't get it for them. So it's a very, it's a very challenging business. And when I started in the business, I remember I went to New York. I was working with this agency that worked with young people coming out of college, training them. They had a good training program. That was important to me.
Yeah.
I think I spent like a week with this, with the guy I started training with. And I had to make cold call. I mean, all my friends were like, they were young, had no families, whatever. I think I made 10 cold calls and I forget his name. And I said to him, that was the most horrible experience I've ever had in my life. I never want to make another cold call ever.
Right.
Because I feel terrible. I'm calling these people, they're hanging up, you know? And he says, well, that's the point. You're not supposed to make cold calls. And I learned about relationship prospecting. And
yes.
I didn't even know what networking was in those days.
Yes.
And there was no internet, all this kind of stuff.
Nope, that's right.
Well, there was the internet. That was just after law school. It was like 92. But there weren't all these social networks. I mean, you weren't
connecting online,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that if you know the indicators and you can get people to the point where, okay, you can build your business and you can do it and feel good about it, then you're going to obviously increase their chances of success, right?
Well, and the other piece as well is I love how you describe sales. Really, really powerful. And we're so aligned in there. There's another piece is that I really believe that people need to really ask the question. Like we ask the question all the time. We'll say, who wants to be a sales rep? And in the past, or sales professional, hardly anyone's hand,
right.
Maybe one or two.
I don't want to be a salesman, but that's like used cars and stuff like that, right?
And so they're not really identifying who are the best salespeople. And then we sort of say, well, hold on, who's the best salespeople? And then all of a sudden, people will go, oh, Obama, Oprah Winfrey, Steve Jobs.
They start recognizing
that, gee, president many times actually means best salesperson.
Right.
You know, VP, you know, means great salesperson.
And that they hide
really what they're doing. And really, again, it's not hiding because anybody who's talking to the vice president knows that, you know, again, they're helping you discover what fits or doesn't fit, you know,
right.
They're delegating,
they're running an organization. I mean, the good ones. Like the other ones are dictators. That's the difference, right? A dictator is a person who tells you what to do and this is the way you got to do and that's it. I don't care how you feel, what you do. That's not a salesperson.
No.
Be successful in that, just beating people up.
Exactly. And then as well, you're right, you're broadening it. So it's not just sales of products or services, but also the sale of the client, of just what's the mission and values of the company, selling that so that we're enthusiastic. You're enthusiastic about your business because you help your clients save enormous pain by setting their companies up in the correct way, by making sure they don't sign that contract that didn't make sense, by making the changes, by even also just the thinking of, oh, you're right. I should talk to my future partner about that before we do this.
I have some right now. Unfortunately, they didn't.
Yes, that's
right. It's a problem.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and I know as well from listening to your podcast, you really want to get out in front of it always with your clients. And again, once you start working with a lawyer, I know certainly my experience, you never stop working with a lawyer again for their really, really great, to me, it's always experience. It's experience of what's gone wrong.
Yeah. Like,
and that's so helpful to sort of see.
Well, that's the difference, right? I have business owners that try and write their own customer agreements and so this is the first time you're doing it. Maybe the second. I've drafted hundreds of contracts and I've looked at contracts that are terrible and blow up and you can't expect them to think of everything that should go into a contract. And they're never perfect anyway, but experience, 20 years of experience about drafting agreements definitely has an impact. And on my side of the law, people hopefully work with me on an ongoing basis where they call me every month and we got things going on. There's other sides of the law where, and sometimes it's me, where people are coming, they're going, I gotta close my doors. I'm like, didn't you just like open like 6 months ago?
Well,
we expanded too quickly and it was winter time and we're an ice cream store. We didn't anticipate capital and this and that. And they don't even have a business plan.
Yeah.
And you know, now I'm negotiating with their landlord. I'm negotiating with the equipment company.
Yeah.
I'm cleaning up the mess.
Yes.
Best that I can. And that's not the position you want to be in. So I think when you get these kids when they're young, and they don't have families and they don't have a lot at risk and they don't have a lot of capital at risk either. It's really their time, right? And
their energy. That's exactly it. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, that's why I started the podcast because I was frustrated with the fact that there's a lot of people that just like accidentally fall into business.
Right.
And they don't even spend it. I mean, forget about whether they're lucky enough to meet someone like you.
Right.
They don't even spend the time going out and, you know, reading basic things like, you know, everything from the one page marketing plan to referral of a lifetime to,
yeah,
you know, all those types of book, Mike Michalowicz's books to, you know, to learn simple systems to run whatever business it is that they think should be a great idea. By the way, good ideas doesn't mean it should be a business.
Well, yeah. And it's really almost always about the execution. Like, you know, one of the biggest things I always like to describe in our business is that we are in a business, window cleaning and house painting services are literally commoditized.
Right.
So how do you run a business in a commoditized industry? Well, you change the game. So we've changed the game in this commoditized industry. So what we've done is we are not a painting and a window cleaning business. We're a management program.
Right.
So as a result, we're attracting these amazing students who would otherwise not think of working in a painting or window cleaning business, but they see, I'm going to learn systems, sales, marketing.
And it's a simple concept. It's not a complicated business. Yep. You guys know it very well. You're right. You could do a lot of things, but why do that? You could go out and hire your own painting contractors and run the business traditionally, right? And just have kids coming every summer. They want to make extra money. You don't have to turn them into leaders and entrepreneurs, but that's kind of contrary to your mission and what you're interested in doing.
Well, it's actually right on the mission, and it's the secret sauce, because we wouldn't be able to attract these amazing kids. We wouldn't be able to scale the business. And then the other piece is that our customers want to buy over us, want to choose us over other local contractors because they love the idea of supporting students.
It's a great story.
Yeah. So again, that's what really, in terms of a business plan, it's how do we separate ourselves out from the marketplace? For you, not many lawyers have podcasts. It's a way to see yourself as a thought leader and separate yourself out as, I could deal with this lawyer. Oh wow, look at all the things that he's discovered. Look at all the clients he has.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I think that the kids. I don't know. I think you're doing what Mike Michalowicz calls eradicating entrepreneurial poverty.
Yes,
because you're teaching them young, so they start doing it, you know, the right way, and all the pieces work together because the homeowners are more endeared to do the business with them because they're students, and your model works because you're really not running a painting company. You're running a management company to teach them how to run a painting company.
Yeah.
And it supports the whole organization. So how long, what's the life cycle of a student that comes in? Like, what's the longest time frame a student's ever been with your company?
Well, the longest time frame our former VP was here 20 years.
Either he had trouble getting through school or stayed with him a long time.
He was paid significantly well to and now he runs an amazing real estate business.
When you say VP, so he moved up in your company.
He moved up in our organization. But typically, and then we've had district managers who are running teams, but they then become full timers and they get into six,
that's
seven,
not
eight,
the student
9 years.
Level. I'm talking about running a team student, to paint houses. Yeah.
Very rarely would someone ever stay longer than 6 years and be a student. It's quite common 3 to 4 years during their university career. And one of the things that our students identify is they say, well, look at how much money I'm making. Look at the skill development that I'm having. Why don't I stay an extra year? Why don't I wrap up my course next year and I'll do one more season and I'll put a whole bunch more money in my pocket.
Yeah.
A lot of times as well, because of doing this, they look at a corporate career and they see, wow, I've already made what the typical corporate job is for the first few years now.
Right.
Why would I want to go there? So that they're already thinking more entrepreneurially. So
of course.
So, do I start to develop in real estate? Do I start to develop another business? While I'm doing this, am I going to start another business on the side?
Yeah. and maybe complements what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And we actually, our district managers actually support those. Like, we support those. It's like, hey, that's great. Of course you want to run that. Like, our goal, our mission is to create 1,000 millionaires. So it's, so a lot of companies, when you're doing that sort of thing, they get threatened.
Yeah.
They're upset. What do you mean? You got
you're going to take away from the business
here,
right?
Yeah. No. As you know, we want to encourage that.
Right. Abundance theory is a good theory.
Yes.
And I'm sure you do it from a standpoint of, if you think that that's going to hurt what they're trying to accomplish over here, then you'll have a discussion with them about it, right?
We certainly would. And more like, especially it would be in their first year, we'd say, hold on, it's really difficult. This is full on. But once people start getting in their second and third year, it's like, oh yeah, I can separate out this time.
Yeah.
I can use more leverage. And especially, again, if it's something that someone's really doing, one of the things that we do find is typically, again, in their first, second, third year, they're usually really dialed in because, you know, we'll see our second year operators literally double in business.
Right, because they've gotten used to it, business, they're better at it, and they're running full speed now.
But it really, one of the things I'm most proud of, Mitch, is we used to have people regularly tell us, I learned more this year than any time in my life in their first year.
I'm sure.
It would rarely happen. Now we're regularly getting it happen where people are saying that in their second year, in their third year. And the reason is because the scale of their business is jumping up. Then all of a sudden I've got three other leaders I'm managing who are managing
people. They're learning more skills.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, really changing their thinking.
Yeah.
And how they're running their business.
So have more of your students gone on to other entrepreneurial ventures, or would you say, or have more of them gone into corporate? Not corporate America,
corporation. But actually, a lot of our we've had a lot of successful Canadians go down to the United States because obviously the United States economy is incredible.
Yeah. Now they got to stay here; they can't get back in until coronavirus passes.
That's exactly it. But I think there's a lot of entrepreneurialism. Like, there really is a lot to be said for working in a large firm.
Yeah.
But really, excelling like an entrepreneur, being in the results economy, really creating value that are very, very present for big firms to say, this person's a rock star, you know, let's have them run a division, let's have them do this, really that they can really distinguish the success that they have.
Right. Absolutely. I find that if it's a process that can allow a student to shine and really develop his skills, I mean, I can't imagine you have too many bad stories afterward, you know, people going on to whatever they're going on to. I mean, you set up the criteria. So you're selecting the proper kids, let's call them, not the best of the best, but the kids that have those
100%
traits, right? To make them successful, because you can't, unfortunately, make everyone successful.
No, one of the things I always like to say is for sure we rig it. It's kind of like private schools. Like, if you look at private schools, what do? They take the best kids, they only take the best kids from the best families who are already well-connected, and then they later on say, oh, look at how well they did, and they got into these amazing schools, and later on they did
this.
They had
a selection process.
Absolutely. So we've done the same thing, and we continue to do it, and we get more and more rigorous about our selection process,
right?
That makes all the difference. And then the other piece that we've done really well is right now I think we have about 70 alumni testimonials, and that's one of the things that I set up my podcast for. Was every week I'll interview another amazing alumni, and then I'll also have them come do a testimonial.
Right.
And I've seen
on the website. There's a lot of testimonials on studentworks.com, and you can get the podcast that way too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You just made me think of something. You said you have how many operators right now on average?
Well, we expect that we'll be over 200 this coming summer that we'll have operators.
Is that a big jump from
that? We'll have our best year ever. We expect to be over $17 million worth of business this coming season.
Great. Okay. So you have about 200 operators. So do you remember, can we share some stories without embarrassing anybody about some kids that were, you know, spectacular performers and things?
Absolutely. Well, without sharing names, because I'm not sure if I can, but just one of our former operators, we recruited him at a McMaster University probably 18, 20 years ago. He went down to the United States and is running a business out of Florida. And he was just offered seven figures, multiple seven figures to go buy a business. And he and so a couple of things, that's really great. One of the other things that's really great is he called me, asked for a half hour of my time just to talk about it and just to sort of, you know, again, not walk through the legals, work through the pragmatic business.
Right.
What have you experienced? What would you see about either accepting or turning down the deal? And I was really, really touched in it. And it motivates me to sort of keep working to sort of make such a difference.
A lot of your kids stay in touch with you?
Yeah, a lot of them do. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really so much easier now with all the ways to connect
right,
through LinkedIn and Facebook groups. And so it's really been great.
Yeah. There's a Facebook group for the kids, for the students?
Yes. Yeah. But one of the things as well that'll happen, like we just had one of our operators, again, very successful operator, Rob Friday, get married this fall, just this summer, with the numbers, it raised to 100 and, you know, that we're able for COVID and they separated.
Right, the number went up,
but,
yeah.
There were like a dozen of our alumni there or something like that, like six to eight. Like, so it's how tight that group is.
Yeah.
You know, they're tight, they're friends. And that's what really continues on is meeting people who are really like-minded is a really, really amazing thing. And then they stay friends, which is really powerful.
You're building a community is really what it comes down to.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
People that are like-minded.
Yes, that's right.
What, because I've taken up a lot of your time this morning, what kind of advice do you give to people? So if there's people out there listening, they may be students, they may be in the United States, so they can't participate in your program.
For
right?
sure.
What kind of advice do you have from things that you've seen with the kids? If you're getting started in a business, even if you're not a student, you know, you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, what kind of advice do you have in general that you tell these kids to increase their chances of success, let's say?
Well, See, Mitch, to me, the most important thing to focus on is integrity. And I don't mean, although it's really important, integrity and not breaking the law. What I mean by integrity is when you say you're going to do something, are you going to do it? So ultimately, life in the world comes from when Chris Thompson says, I'm going to do something, no one else knows, will I do it? No one else knows. It's in those private moments. So when one of the examples I love to give is when your alarm goes off,
right?
Do you hit snooze?
Right.
Because if you do, in my mind, in my world, I just missed my first commitment of the day.
Right.
I made a commitment.
Then why'd you set the alarm for that time?
That's right. I set the alarm this morning for 6:40. I guess I woke up at 6:38. I looked, I go, oh, I'll turn it off. I'm getting up. But at 6:40, I was definitely going to get up.
Right.
And so then it starts like, and because I've got conference call and this and meetings. And so if all of a sudden you're late, then you're running
the
late
whole
the entire
off,
day.
Right. They call that self-obedience, right? If you're not obedient
self-obedience.
To yourself.
Yeah. So for me, if I'm a leader in the United States, anywhere in Canada, I'm looking at getting better and better at when I say I'm going to go to the gym, go to the gym. When I say I'm going to call mom, whatever it is, like I'm committing. And then as a result, then I can do more outside to other people.
Right. I think that's a good comment because if you want to be a high performer and you want to work at a high level, you start your whole day off by 10 minutes and the whole thing, you're playing catch up all day and you can't expect spectacular results if you're just doing mediocre effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And there's just power to keeping your word in your life, right?
Yeah.
Just, hey, I am my word. And that's one of the biggest things we focus on our program. And that's also one of the next thing I would link to very closely is habits.
Uh-huh.
What are your habits? If your habit is to sit on the couch and drink beer every night,
not going to be too successful in the
program. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing wrong with drinking beer. You know,
that's
you
fine.
Know,
then it's not for you to be an entrepreneur.
But every night and lots of beer, that becomes misaligned with the goals. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you can look at the characteristics of high performers that are, you know, they're there early, they stay late, they're working long hours, or maybe they're not even working long hours, but they're very efficient with their time.
Yeah.
You know, they're keeping their schedules, they have systems in place.
Yeah. They're being very thoughtful, right? You're the gentleman you've had on a number of times just recently, you know, very thoughtful, very strategic in what they're thinking about how, what processes they're going to set up to run their business and support their business.
Right.
You know, that's something that's really important.
Yeah. I think maybe the kids start to see that if they do it more than once and they do it several times and they do that all summer, next thing you know, it's kind of like a natural habit for them at that point. Right?
And that's what we're looking for. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
It, you know, and the way they act.
Yeah.
They
act. And for you in your life, I'm sure, again, you're just consistently showing up like Mitch every day. And that leads to a high level of success. And again, if my behavior starts to shift, then my success will shift.
Yeah, there's no question about it. That's one of the problems is that when you talk about falling into business accidentally, a lot of people, they don't have that muscle that they've exercised and worked out. And look, I'm now a solo practitioner. I run my own practice. So if I'm not on top of when I do, what I do, keeping my calendar, keeping my commitments, getting things back to people, nobody else is going to do it. And there's not a lot of attorneys that can do that. So that's why they go to work for a law firm or something like that, because they need to know that they're coming into work, somebody's turning the lights on, do their work, they get the next one, you know? And they're not, you know, it does take a certain kind of person to be able to be an entrepreneur and run a business, whether it's a simple business or whether it's a complicated business, because they all involve books, marketing, management, decision making, and being honest with, you know, honest and supportive of yourself. Don't self-sabotage, which a lot of people do. You know, it's very easy, especially during coronavirus. It's very easy to fall off the wagon, so to speak.
And that's another thing, though, is the self-sabotaging. You know, one of the things that we have, and we really train our coaches really, really well to actually deal with what's happening outside the business. So, you know, where are you self-sabotaging and where else is that showing up in your world? And what could we do to change that? And really about self-sabotage, the biggest thing is really understanding the impact of self-sabotaging, understanding the impact of being out of communication or being out of action and how harmful that can be for you. Right. And so as a result, I'm going to change. I'm going to change my behavior and I'm not going to do that. But it's a lot of times it's hard for people to see that without a coach. And that's one of the great things about, again, at a young age, having a coach, seeing that, you know, you'll never, you know, like, again, I, you know, of course I'm not always in integrity. I'm not always doing what I say, but when I don't do what I say, it's conscious or it's,
well, that's the thing. You're conscious of it. A lot of people walk through life and they're totally unconscious about everything that they're doing.
Yeah. They don't show up on time. They never even consider it.
No.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
It's funny because all the people that I've interviewed in all kinds of different fields, you know, they're coaches, they're habit scientists, they're business owners, whatever. 90% of the time it's consciousness. It's a level of doing things consciously and realizing that, you know, the reason you're not doing it is because you're afraid and it's not that big of a deal. So you realize that's not that, and you do it and it's not so bad, you know, that type of stuff.
Yes.
Or, you know, you shouldn't be. You, why are you pressing your snooze for 23 times every morning? Just get up and do it. You do it enough, you'll feel good about it. You know, go to bed a half an hour earlier. I know that sounds easy to say, but sometimes we got to push through the difficulty stuff because we're always, as human beings, we're very easy to fall back into the easy, easy way, the snacks instead of the good food that tastes better and is drinking beer on the couch. You know, that's very easy.
Principles talks about first and second order consequences, right? It's so much easier to eat the chocolate because it tastes good. But the second order consequences is I become fat and then I become lethargic and then I make worse and worse decisions, you know, where, and again, there's nothing wrong with chocolate, but too much chocolate gets me on the wrong road. So it's, and the first order consequences are, oh, I've got to go call that client. It may be an uncomfortable situation. I don't want to do that. But the second order consequences is I resolve that quickly. They give me referral work.
Right.
That client works out. They're a long-term client of mine, right? And that's the second order consequences. And my capital in my business builds up. My success builds up. My self-regard builds up. Right. So it's funny how in the world almost always the first order consequences, the first choice is the hard one. It's right. easy to choose if it's bad, right? Yeah. Oh, I feel like a chocolate bar or whatever,
right.
or a drink. And then it's the opposite, right?
I tell my kids, if it tastes good, it's probably not good for you. That's the rule. It doesn't mean you shouldn't ever have it,
of course.
It's probably not good for you. You know, I think also when it comes to dealing with people and making business decisions, usually it's not as whatever we think the negative consequences are going to be, 9 times out of 10, they're not true.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
You know, and you learn that after a while that it's all just in your head most of the time.
You're making it up. Oh my God, this conversation is going to be so challenging when in fact it's not challenging at all. Wow, that was great. And I discovered this and they were, and again, maybe one of the things I'm worried about is that I didn't do what I say. Well, I call, I say, I said I was going to get this done for you, Mitch. I apologize. I take ownership. I should have. And they go, oh, wow, that's really great. Okay. When can you do it for me? Oh, I'll do it here. I'm going to separate it sometime today. It'll be by the end of the day, and you go, oh, that's easy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Just give people a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any parting words? Any thoughts?
Well, actually, I had a question for you.
And okay.
It's one of the standard questions that I ask all my guests, and I know this is a joint show. So when you think of a leader of tomorrow,
right,
what comes to mind?
I think of somebody who is compassionate and understanding of others, somebody who, we just had a whole thing on leadership on another pod. It was like a video podcast, me and another guy and the woman who runs it. It was all about thought leadership and being a leader. I think that a good leader is not the kind of person that tells people what to do, but helps them make decisions with proper information and understand the consequences of those decisions. The leader doesn't have to be the person that's driving everything. They're not responsible for everything that goes on. They got to guide people. That's the difference. Like I said before, being a dictator, somebody who dictates what's going to happen and somebody who says, okay, if that's what you want to do, let's talk about what the consequences could be. Here's the problems. Here's the good side of it, the bad side of it, and help them make a better decision, just as a salesperson would do. So I think from a standpoint of, being a leader and leading people, you can make better decisions by helping people or be a better leader by helping people make those decisions as opposed to taking over. I find that sometimes people think they're the leader of the organization. They got to do everything themselves. Yeah. That's not, you limitation. Teach people to manage other people. They're not going to go and paint all the houses themselves. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can't do $200,000 of business and paint the houses yourself. That's a little hard.
Absolutely. And one of the things we always love to sort of get is really, if you think about the best salespeople, the best coaches, they ask 6 times more questions. They're helping people. And then if someone tells me something, it never works as well as if I discover it. Oh, like it's like people can see so-and-so struggling in this area. It won't work to tell them that person needs to discover. Oh, that's why it's not working. And it's like a whole other part of the brain, like everything sort of comes into line with that. And that's what great coaches do. That's what great leaders do in my mind.
Right. Because if you don't come to, it's like with your kids, right? If you can't get them to believe that it was their thought or their decision, they probably won't follow it because it came from you. So people don't just do things. You just tell them.
Of course
not. You do that and they just leave and it's all fixed.
Absolutely.
You got to make them come to that. And you're right. That's what a good leader does when it comes to guiding people along the way. And I hope, and this is a little bit of a worldly type of thing, but I hope that our leaders, because like in the United States, there may be a change in management, so to speak, in the next couple of months. I hope that the leaders of our governments and our organizations and our corporations keep that in mind, that we need to kind of, and we need to be transparent and honest with people.
Yeah.
I think that we're not. And I think a good leader is honest when it comes to saying, okay, you know what? This is not going to be good.
Yeah.
This decision or this change in the economy or this change is not good. And we need to pivot and we need to, it doesn't mean we can't solve it, but let's deal with it head on. So I think
here's what's true. Yeah. Here's what's true about the what we're facing. I agree completely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.